Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
In Powerhouse, our focus today, good friend Kathy Anderson is in from In Powerhouse. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning, Ted.
It was a big weekend. I saw you all over Facebook, and this was the real car wash every year.
Absolutely.
Takes care of In Powerhouse.
They are so wonderful at both car wash locations. They have us out, and they dedicate from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. all of their sales. They turn around and give a donation to In Powerhouse. And, you know, it really adds up. This weekend, it was a beautiful weekend. There were so many people coming out to get their car washed. And it was a lot of fun. The folks in line to get the car washed, when we would hand them things from the organization, they were really excited about it. And there were a lot of people this year that were additionally handing us cash donations. So it was, I think people were really excited to be able to be helping.
Well, and it is such a great fundraiser, and it's the kind of fundraiser you don't see many of. And the fact that Jeff does that with the two locations, it really is remarkable.
Oh my gosh, Jeff and his dad Neil, they are so generous that every sale they turn around and give that as a donation. I mean, 100%. There's no taking anything out. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody makes that purchase, everything gets recorded, and then they turn around at both locations all day long and give that donation to In Powerhouse. It's really impressive.
Well, and the fact that you, the pictures I saw a couple of pictures of you. I guess, were you up at the one on 17 most of the day?
In Stafford, yeah, in the morning.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I saw in a number of other pictures, just some of the other staff people. It really is a great way for people to put a face to In Powerhouse.
You know, we had staff and we had volunteers out. One of our employees' husband, he was out. I think my favorite story really was when Jackie's husband was out there, and he rode his motorcycle because it was a really nice day.
Yeah,
and he had his jacket on with his military, patches, and there was a guy that came up and he's like, well, I gave, you know, 20 at the back door. He's like, but then I saw you, man, and I saw your vest. And he's like, my son is in the Navy. He's like, here's another 20, you know. So people were just excited, I think, to do a little socializing, because even though it was a great socially distanced kind of opportunity, because mm-hmm. the cars could go through and no one really, it was outside, so no one really had to spend time together. But the little bit that people were able to connect, people were taking advantage of that.
Well, and it really is a great way for you to be able to talk about, for people to learn about In Powerhouse. I think most people have heard about it, but a lot of times you hear about it and you think that's nice, or I don't know much about them. They sure learned a lot this weekend.
They really did. We handed out information for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, because October's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It's really the event that kicks off that time for us. I remember talking to a couple ladies who opened their window and they were like, what is this? I'm so glad. I'm so grateful that you do this work.
Yeah.
And it was an opportunity for people to be excited and to learn about those resources in our community. The more people that know about it, the greater the chance that someone will call the hotline and be acquainted with the organization.
A big thanks to Rio Car Wash for what they do. And especially in these hard times, it would have been understandable if they had just said, you know, Kathy, we just can't do it this year. But that's not Jeff. And
no.
He is so, his background and he really believes in the cause of In Powerhouse.
I mean, having been a prosecutor and then a clerk of court, he sees domestic violence in the courthouse all the time. So he, you know, the fact that he does this every year, of course, he reached out and said, hey, what's our date this year? Which was such great news for us. But that he does this and they do this every year. Even the employees, everybody gets excited that it's this time of year when we all come together and raise money for In Powerhouse to support survivors of domestic violence. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I can remember the first time that you brought him in and we did a show. And I remember thinking, wonder how we're going to talk for an hour about a car wash.
I know.
And, but it was, as soon as we got going, his passion for this and his passion for Empower House and the stories he told about his days as a prosecutor and how you were so needed in this community, it turned out to be a show I'll never forget.
He had some really important stories to share about women coming through the courthouse and the kinds of barriers they had.
Just how they were treated.
Yeah, to survive and to get through that violence and seeking relief from the courts. And sometimes people experiencing domestic violence, they don't necessarily want to go to court. They don't even realize they'll end up in court when they call the police. So when the police come out and they see probable cause, it's essentially a mandated arrest at that point, and then folks are in court. So he definitely saw all the tragic circumstances come through. He really turned into an advocate to support the services mm-hmm. that are available, like our shelter, like our 24-hour hotline, and the folks that go into the courthouse.
So again, thank you to Rio Car Wash and what they did with 100% of car washes on Saturday at the two locations in this area. You also have a golf tournament coming up, just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we couldn't believe it that this year we figured out that a lot of people are still golfing. Golfing mm-hmm. is one of those sports that is safe because it's outside. So then we looked at, well, how can we make it safe if you're actually going to run a tournament during this time? So October 2nd is our annual charitable car wash. I mean, I'm into the cars.
Yeah, you're still the car washes.
It's our annual golf tournament, and we will be at Pendleton and Ladysmith. And October 2nd, again, Domestic Violence Awareness Month is October. So we have a lot of teams registered. We had over 120 golfers, which is nearly full. And we expect some more to register this week. We have sponsorships, and it's all raising money for Empower House to support survivors of domestic violence.
That is just incredible and great to hear, Kathy, because you do worry about some of these things where some people may pull back just because individual, maybe they can't do that, but they still want to play golf and they still want to help out Empower House.
Yeah, we definitely expect that there are businesses struggling and won't be able to support this year. So we've, you know, and then there are others that have been able to plug along and are very active and mm-hmm. even sometimes more active working through the pandemic and delivering services that are much needed. So we were very fortunate that, you know, everybody's wanting to come back and support the tournament. And, you know, we put in some measures to help golfers feel comfortable. Like, we're not going to congregate at registration. We're not mm-hmm. all going to start at the same time with everybody in their carts.
Yeah.
And, you know, launching, everybody heads out together. It's a staggered tee time. People will have an assigned time, and they'll come in with their team. They'll get their cart. They'll grab their breakfast or their lunch. They'll get out on the course. And, you know, the biggest exposure they'll have is sitting in the cart next to their other party playing. But they also, if they want to, we can get plexiglass in the cart if they're not feeling comfortable with that level. But, you know, with the air circulating and being outside, you know, I think this is something that most of them are already doing anyway.
Yeah.
So it's great.
So if someone's interested in still taking part, is there still chances to jump on and get involved in this?
Absolutely. The best way would be on our website. It's empowerhouseva.org, because right there they can click on the golf tournament information and it'll take them to registration.
Mm-hmm. Empowerhouseva.com. Again, the
.org.
.org. Mm-hmm. .org. Yes.
Yep.
Empowerhouseva.org. The golf tournament is October the 2nd. It is at Pendleton's in Caroline County. So Kathy Anderson here this morning. We're talking Empower House, empowerhouseva.org. When we come back, we will continue along on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Opinions, we've all got them, and we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Kathy Anderson here this morning with Empowerhouse. Kathy, you were one of the people, you and Ann Klockner, in the early days of the pandemic, you were on all the time.
Yeah.
And it was, those were really rough because there was so much unknown. And you were dealing with, and you would talk about situations where people were just, you know, we all talked about how things changed hour by hour. That was, I mean, it was minute for minute for some people. And it was really tough, especially with what you do.
Yeah, it was a dark time, and it, you know, it continues to be obviously a dark time for everybody who's living in domestic violence right now. In those early days, it was hard to know certainly what was going on with folks. And, you know, we had a surge in hotline calls at the beginning, and then we had a slump. So we were very worried, as were the schools very worried about kids, as was Child Protective Services worried about kids, as we were worried about what kind of violence was going on in the home, and rightly so, because domestic violence is known to increase during during tragedies, national crisis. So no different in this pandemic. We did see over that time, because it's been 6 months now, so we definitely saw an increase this year over last year on a number of things. Like, we had a 28% overall increase from this 6 month period over the prior 6 month period in hotline calls. Some more people reaching out, pretty tough situations. We also had a higher usage of like our shelter and housing program. So for those people in shelter and those people in housing, we had longer stays and really more need there. I think that another thing that you and I've touched on before is that folks in those domestic violence situations have been experiencing more grave kind of outcomes, or more higher incidence of those things that can harm them. So we saw a 43% increase in people reporting that their injuries required emergency medical attention. We saw a 55% increase in reports of sexual assault with our population. And we saw a 16% increase in people needing to relocate because of the violence.
Boy, we went through so much, and with the whole pandemic, and like you say, we still are, of trying to figure things out and to make it. But to add this component to it has to be, and in a lot of cases, it's just terrifying, because you described how in many cases, you know, the abuser was always then in the home. There was no break. And that created a whole set of circumstances.
Yeah, with telecommuting or people being laid off or out of work, it was a very scary time, because just having access to other people, if that abuser's home all the time, and really everybody's home, that creates its own issues when everybody's home and you can't get out. But then also not realizing there's not a lot of people around where you can access them. You can't make a phone call to your friend. You're not yourself going out to work. I mean, the most people were doing, some people were going to the grocery store. But if your abuser was home and limited your access even to do those things, you know, we're used to talking with folks who sometimes are locked in their homes or chained to a bed. I mean, these are very severe forms of violence. It is not everybody's situation, but we work with people who have cameras all over the house and are being recorded. Mm. You know, we have some incidences where their ability to sort of run their own lives and take care of themselves and their children is severely monitored and limited.
And if you have that person in the house then all the time, or besides that, if there are money concerns, job concerns, and they're even wired even more, that's not a good situation.
I mean, unlimited access and unlimited time to really do harm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if there's more stress, I mean, I was surprised that I didn't in our data see people talking about increased suicide threats or increased feelings that they needed that they were thinking of suicide, because that's another thing that we record. And I don't know if that's because people did have access. The people we were talking to were able to access us, you know, and I guess over time things have opened up some. So that's a great help. But definitely, you know, the ability to communicate with other people was so limited in the beginning. And for many, it's still very much a limiting factor.
One of the last shows that you and I did face to face up until this morning, and one of the last shows I think we even did before the pandemic hit, was you talking about strangulation being an issue.
We had a conference, so we had the experts from the nation who travel across the world and all across the United States providing training on strangulation. And the reason that that's even a thing is the lethality involved with folks who are experiencing that. So not only does it increase your potential for homicide by, I think, 700%, new research is suggesting it's by 1,000%. But because of that, and because it actually occurs at some percentage in those cases that we work with and people experiencing domestic violence, that getting our community trained, we had almost 400 professionals from all across our community in healthcare, law enforcement, the courts, other victim service providers, mental health, child abuse, all of these systems coming together to get trained on it. And unfortunately, you know, it's one of those things that if it's happening, it needs to be identified quickly. People need to know what to do about mm-hmm. getting them in for medical treatment and assessment, and then, you know, making sure that they have all the resources they need, and then being able to prosecute those for the crimes that they are, you know, really attempted murder. You know, the likelihood that it will happen again, or that murder will occur the next time around, it's a very scary form of something that's already scary, domestic violence.
Yeah, boy, you know, it's just it's another component. The other thing we should say, this has created all kinds of different challenges for you and your staff. You're used to being able to work with people one-on-one and face-to-face, and that really has changed. And boy, during the pandemic, several mornings I talked to various people on your staff, and they were still as enthusiastic and just really attacking this and just figuring out ways to get it done.
Yeah. I mean, our in-person work has really been curtailed, and that has to do with protecting everyone's health and safety from a workplace perspective, and also protecting those we support. Obviously, our shelter program is robustly serving in person and trying to do that as safely as possible. Some of our other services where we go into the courthouse, for example, we had, as an example, we had a woman who had a special needs child. And as a single mom going through domestic violence, she had a protective order and she needed to go into the courthouse to get it renewed. There was a date on the docket. And protective orders was one of the things mm-hmm. that the courts was open for. It's considered an emergency hearing. So in talking with her, she really was struggling. She wanted certainly to renew the protective order, but she, as the sole care provider for a special needs child who was at high risk, she herself needed to take precautions.
Yeah.
So that was really hard for us in the beginning, trying to help people navigate when those occurrences happened, how we could work with them and work with the court system to really support that kind of an issue. I think the courts did a really good job of being creative. So in this instance, it allowed us to have conversations about, you know, what possibility is there for telephonic and video conferencing for those sorts of hearings, because they do that already with folks in the jail. And so, yeah the Supreme Court activated some technology that allowed them to increase their use of telephonic and video opportunities for being in court. So, you know, yes, everybody's been creative on our staff. You know, the schools let out and everybody was trying to figure that out from home. And those of us on staff who go out to the schools and provide those presentations in the schools found themselves surprisingly, okay, all of our gigs are canceled.
Yeah.
And we're probably not going to be doing that for a while. So one of the things that that everybody focused on at that point was we had 60 kids in our housing program. So from ages, you know, birth to teenagers, even adult children, you know, we had a lot of ground to cover. But again, 60 who were 17 and under. So our staff set about working with moms and checking in with them and finding out what their needs were and saying, hey, would your child like an extra support person at this time? Which was really beneficial because everybody shut down and everybody was isolated. And there was a lot of misinformation. There was the lack of access to information if you didn't have internet. Certainly the schools were trying to communicate with everybody through electronic means. And a lot of our housing families, we realized, didn't really have all the tools they needed. So a number of things happened. Most of the ladies signed up right away for those extra services, but then some, you know, signed up over time through word of mouth about how great they enjoyed those services. But every child was assigned a staff person, and those check-ins involved a number of things. We were able to connect everybody to their school system to make sure they had devices and internet. Then everything else too, like food or activities or information about the pandemic, what's real, how can you navigate that? There were a lot of conversations with the kids around their friends and their peers and their social relationships. And so it was just a really good time for those kids to have more voices in their life. They had a stressed out parent who was managing then single parenthood, and now they're in a pandemic and even further isolated. So the moms appreciated the break. They appreciated that extra social emotional connection for their kids. And then that also helped us to connect those families with additional resources, food resources, and other basic needs stuff.
It was through the whole time. I mean, you were busy and even busier, I think, because of everything that was going on. And just as you describe it, there were just so many moving parts. One thing, the schools may have been closed, but then that opened up a whole lot of other things.
It felt like we were busier. I couldn't quite comprehend why that would be, because we also closed our public office to the public.
Yeah.
So, you know, but we were going in and doing various things during that time, including assembling packages. I think every other week they were delivering to the housing families. We have a new partnership with the Salvation Army where some of our staff go over and help package up backpacks of food for our families. But, you know, the whole time has been a learning experience and a lesson in innovation for sure.
Kathy Anderson here with Empower House. EmpowerHouseVA.org is the website. We will continue on and continue to talk about this when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:32.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Kathy Anderson's here from Empower House this morning, empowerhouseva.org. Check out the website, see how you can get involved, as maybe get trained as a volunteer, become a donor. Through the whole pandemic, Kathy, and you're one of the people that I this is the first time I've really seen you. We did something a couple weeks ago in advance of the car wash, but I hadn't seen you in months. We had talked by phone, but you have people come through here and you look forward to seeing them, and I hadn't seen you, so it's
Aww,
good to have you in person here today.
I got to see you, but on video, right?
Well, yes, you would see me in those situations. As we talk about just some of the struggles and some of the things out there that a lot of the people who use Empower House and need you for, housing is such a big. Is such a big component of this. You did mention one thing, and I hadn't even thought about it just a few minutes ago, when you talked about just housing and keeping people safe. Because we've seen how some of these closed areas with like nursing homes have had just some horrific Absolutely. Stories. And boy, I'm sure you all had to be really careful, super careful to make sure that something didn't get going.
You know, right out of the gate, even before we released guidelines from our organization about how to handle that, you know, we had very proactive employees who, you know, who wasn't paying attention to the news. And
yeah.
really, so cleaning protocols, social distancing right from the start. How are we going to engage with those we're helping? So in our shelter setting, I think you know this, we have, it's a congregate facility, but it's spread out. There are 9 suites with 15 bedrooms. So each of those suites is its own unit that enters then back out into the you know, larger areas. Mm-hmm. So what we did was make sure that there was no more than one family per those units. And, you know, in times when it's needed, you know, if one of those suites has 2 or 3 bedrooms and we have small families, they may share a suite. So where, you know, all the doors lock and they have access to bathrooms. But during the pandemic, we were like, okay, how do we spread people out, make it safer? So we decided, you know, we wouldn't have any more than 9 households at the shelter. So that like caused some other areas of needing to address things, because then we had people needing us and we were very careful about who came in. Mm-hmm. You know, normal circumstances will be a little you know, we'll be a little more open about who comes in, because we also work very closely with our homelessness and housing folks. We're a part of that continuum of care. During this time, we were very sensitive to, is this domestic violence? Like, what's actually going on? And we had a lot of people coming in. So, you know, we also had a lot of people staying longer. Our staff weathered that really well. We lightened everybody's shifts so that we still had the same number of staff, but we tried to shorten their shifts. We had to have less people in their workspaces. We still had a lot of engagement with the families coming in, but a lot of people kind of stayed to their rooms more. People came and went. We had some scares where someone had gone to the hospital, come back with a note saying, you know, that they needed to quarantine because of their symptoms and exposure. So those were some early scares.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody weathered it. The staff decided to bring meals to those families that had to stay in their rooms. And, you know, we talked about ordering takeout for them, but our staff really felt like it would be more contained, less exposure if they just went ahead and brought people their meals. So, you know, our staff has really rallied to do things that they don't normally find themselves doing, and are exceptionally dedicated to making sure everybody's safe. It's already a facility, and when people are staying there because of domestic violence, safety is a priority. So this is a different kind of safety.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, never thought of that. So again, I remember when you were building, or you were kind of retrofitting what was one of your shelter, and to see it all come together. And I kept imagining that as we talked about that, and just knowing the close quarters everyone was in.
Yeah. So, I mean, they were delivering services now in our new model, in person with masks, keeping quite a distance. It's hard to do that with kids, you know, because kids are going to run up and, you know, hug and, you know, jump in laps and things like that. So, you know, everybody's weathered that really well. But they're also delivering some of their services by phone. So, you know, a lot of people have phones these days. So, you know, in terms of check-ins and things that people need, some of that is done over the phone, even within the walls of our shelter. So, you know, they're managing, and there's been like a staggered use of the kitchens, and they had to organize things too over that time to keep people's like mental health kind of top of mind.
Yeah. Add so, that to everything else.
Oh my gosh. They were organizing movie nights. So there's a living room where the door closes, and it tends to be a gathering place in the evening for women. Well, no longer were we encouraging people to gather, very far from it.
Sure.
So we would open they could schedule time, and so one family could go in that room and schedule movie night. And we, you know, people donated, you know, popcorn and candies like you find at the movie theater, and you know, all of that stuff. And so we would just present that package to the family. They'd go in and have their time, which was really lovely for them. And then, you know, our staff would go in and clean afterwards, ready for the next family the next night. So they were constantly trying to, you know, whether it was things we purchased or whether it was things that people donated. There were a lot of people. How can we help? And so trying to have pampering packages and things, you know, activities for the kids. Those that were helping our families in housing were also collecting and amassing sort of packages for the kids in shelter.
I remember in those early days, you had the April shower for the shelter promotion to try to get to try to get some funds to be able to continue this. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there still are the ongoing needs and mm-hmm. a lot of needs and a lot of opportunities out there for all of us to get involved.
Absolutely. So we have registries that help people understand the types of things that we're collecting mm-hmm. and need all the time. So on a registry from our website on Target and also on Walmart, people can see the kinds of things we're collecting. And then, you know, some people are buying that online. Some people are going to stores and picking up things when they go shopping for themselves. So we're hearing from people periodically and with sort of consistency and frequency that, okay, I've got, you know, my car's full of, you know, toilet paper or paper towels or cleaning products or diapers. So all through the pandemic, people have been doing that kind of thing, and it's been really helpful. Food. There was a woman who gave us 212 boxes of cereal. You know, she and her.
How many?
She's 212.
Wow.
212. Yeah, so we're still going through her cereal. It's great. I mean, she was like, oh, I just got all my family and friends. You know, it's like something wonderful for them to do. So each of these types of things, we've had a realtor's office, you know, organize and collect things, many, many more, a lot of individuals. So they look at the registry and they know what we need, and then they pick those things up and contact us, and we arrange for a handoff. We're less successful with the mailed boxes. We've received a few, but some of them had to go back because there just wasn't anybody to receive them, and we didn't know the packages had arrived.
Yeah.
But it's really fantastic that people are still doing that. It saves a whole lot. So in terms of financial output, where we would have to otherwise purchase those things. So between the food that's come in, the partnership with Salvation Army, the partnership with the schools who are providing meals to their respective mm-hmm. students in each locality. So we've connected our families to those. And then every day, a staff person picks up lunches for the kids in shelter, and that's a Salvation Army initiative as well. So we are certainly innovating and doing things differently, but the community has been a great help. And those registries online help people know what our domestic violence shelter is using and what our families in housing are needing. And we really had to purchase very few things. And some of the things we've had to purchase are more like fun things, like I can remember going to the store and grabbing like 20 bouncy balls and 20 sets of sidewalk chalk and, you know, all these things that we just didn't have by donation. But our children and youth team, they were putting together these packages that, you know, it was time during the pandemic when kids started going outside more and their families were, you know, that was good for them to be outside. So just putting together packages of fun ways that they could engage outside.
Boy, and it just points out just some of the unique situations you're facing, because you're trying to keep things as normal and fun for kids. You're trying to protect women. You're trying to keep everyone safe from abusers and from a pandemic. Just you start looking at all these various things, and it really can get overwhelming.
Our heart really goes out to all of the people surviving domestic violence, and we're certainly communicating with them via our hotline. And I mentioned to you, I think that we had a 28% increase in our hotline calls. In addition to that, you know, our staff are kind of paying attention to what's going on. I mean, we had a record number of families in housing at the start of the pandemic, all of which had been paying some portion of their rent. So when we say they're in our housing program, that means we helped by supplying a deposit the first month's rent, and then we pay their rent until they can absorb those costs on their own, which is really exciting to see happen. So of those 27 families we were assisting with their rent, we found that all of them right away in the pandemic all of a sudden found themselves in 100% need. So whereas we were paying about $18,000 a month in our budget going out to those families, all of a sudden we were spending close to $36,000 a month. We hadn't budgeted that. We hadn't budgeted income for that.
No.
I have to tell you, some of the people in our community that were really stars at the beginning of the pandemic, and I have to give a shout out to the Community Foundation and their disaster relief fund, the Community Fund. I'm not sure exactly what it's called, but I think that more or less covers it. But they quickly organized, and in so doing, they created applications that were fast to complete. They were fast to make their decisions and fast to disperse checks. And that really helped us to some degree, because there were other sources from the government that came in later. But that really helped us to say, okay, we're gonna spend the money on these rents. We're not sure where it's coming from, but we're not going to let these people lose their housing.
Yeah.
And so it was just a wonderful thing to see our community come together.
And there still are opportunities. Go to empowerhouseva.org. Like you say, that there's the list of things you need, and the needs continue. The pandemic continues.
Yeah, unfortunately, the pandemic continues. Everybody's over it. And we do see more people out and about, and different things with business, et cetera, have opened, and some have not. And, but we see the infection rate going up in the United States. We monitor what's going on locally. We also are monitoring it by demographics, so that's a whole nother conversation. But the need, no, it hasn't gone away. A lot of the ladies that were out of work, and I think I could spend a lot of time talking about the unique circumstances they face, but many of them have picked up and paid now portions of their rent, or are entirely paying their rent and have stabilized. However, as you said, there's other needs, and those needs continue. Like we now are able to put more people into housing, which is a really big help. With evictions being down because of the moratorium.
Yeah.
And with our community trying to house 95 households, that includes the people in our shelter and people coming to us. It's a lot of work trying to make all of these things happen. Financially, it's a lot. And then supplies-wise, it's a lot. So the fact that we have the registries, that's one way that people can help and have been helping. And then financially, so that we can make all of these needs in our community, who, is a really caring and vibrant community, who does take care of the people in this community. We are definitely seeing people do that in our world, and we think we are so grateful to the fantastic people of this community who care about others in need.
EmpowerhouseVA.org is the website. Kathy Anderson is here. We'll wrap it up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Kathy Anderson here this morning with Empowerhouse. EmpowerhouseVA.org is the website. You have mentioned a number of times, about the hotline number. For people that need to use that hotline number, Kathy, what is that?
It's 540-373-9373. It's 24 hours, and whether in crisis or whether you just want to get a question answered, it is a great number to call, 24 hours, 373-9373.
And if you have to use it or pass it on to people that you may know, that you may suspect, and we'll have to do one of those shows again just of what to do if you suspect something is going on with a friend. But 373-9373 is the hotline number for Empowerhouse. And still, I still look at, when you talk about a 28% increase in the hotline calls, that's a lot of... Those are the people that are calling. There's
a lot of domestic violence.
Yeah.
It's nice to be talking about the hotline too, because a lot of people still say, I didn't know services existed. So it's they're free services, they're confidential, and that's why I said it. You don't have to be in crisis. You can call and ask a question. We have friends and family members that call and ask about people in their lives.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned earlier there is a golf tournament. We talked about ways to give back and to give and to help Empower House financially, and the golf tournament is October 2nd.
This is the last week people can sign up both for sponsorships and for teams. Both of those can be found on our website, empowerhouseva.org. The tournament itself is October 2nd at Pendleton in Ladysmith. But again, this is the last week for that. Online's the best way to do it because you can see what the levels of sponsorship are, and you can also sign up a team online. But last week, and we're excited that so many people are still interested in doing this socially distant golf tournament.
Now, this, and just the fact that so many people are involved in this and that continues, that is great to hear. Also, we should say one more time a thank you to Rio Car Wash for what they did on Saturday.
Jeff Small and his dad, Neil, they were so generous to provide to Empower House again this year all the purchases of car washes on September 19th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. So every car that went through and got their car wash and paid for that $20 wash or that $5 wash, mm-hmm. all of that money, they turned around and write a check to Empower House. So I can't tell you how fantastic during this pandemic it is that such a solid contribution from a business remains in place. We are so appreciating Rio Car Wash.
Yeah, no, it was just as though there were not a pandemic going on, and they were going to do it, and that is terrific. And just the fact it was a great day, and so many people came out.
I wish I could tell you the amount, but we are. I know he's like, okay, come by and get it on Tuesday, but he's kept that close. So I don't know. I think it'll be a record amount this year. I think the highest might have been just over 7,000 before, but it's a big donation.
Yeah.
So it was a beautiful day. A lot of people got their car washed. It was a lot of fun.
EmpowerHouseVA.org again is the website. Look for that list of items that you can purchase and help out Empower House. And again, the hotline number is 373-9373. Well, Kathy, it's been great to have you in and to finally see you again.
Ted, it's great to see you in person.
And we will continue with, especially with next month being Domestic Violence Awareness Month, we'll focus in on that and through the rest of the year talk about, you've got a lot of great partnerships going on with a number of different organizations in the community, and we'll let everyone know. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ted.
EmpowerHouseVA.org. Kathy Anderson here with Empower House. Thank you for listening. We will see you in the morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.